Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning we're going to be reading from the final chapter of Canto 3, chapter 33, and it's the summary of the entire entire section, Sankhya section of Kapila Dev. The whole section begins in chapter 25. So it begins, and the theme is woven throughout. It begins with Devahuti asking her son, because her husband Kardava Muni has gone after tens of thousands of years of being together. It's Satya Yuga, and Kapila Dev is there to look after his mother, and so he went back to the forest. And she's feeling feelings. She's feeling feelings of attachment. And her estimation, undue attachment to family, the body, the relations of the body and with the body. And she's asking her son how to overcome that, because her intelligence, she says, her intelligence is bewildered, and she's troubled in her heart and her mind, and she knows that's not right, and what to do, how to overcome that. The essence of material consciousness is twofold, I and mine. The conception of who we are and the conception of what's in relation to me. I, we're at the center, not Krishna. And mine, what's around me and what I consider to be mine. And I have my plans to make more things mine. And I protect the things that are mine from other people and so forth. Material consciousness. So false ego is at the heart of it all, covering the true conception of who we really are. We accept another conception of who we really are and live our lives accordingly and struggle. So she wants to become free from that struggle. Another very nice section that comes later, he explains so many things. So, in one sense, he's imparting knowledge. And a result of one who has knowledge is detachment, jnana, vairagya. So, standard couplet throughout all of Vedic paradigm, jnana, vairagya. With knowledge, one can be detached from illusion, maya. She hears everything and says, I have a doubt. What's that? The doubt is, I get it. I get the philosophy. I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul, it's all very nice. But the soul is immersed and entangled in material nature. Look in any direction, you see material nature. And our tendency to be involved with material nature is so strong. Who knows how many lifetimes we've been involved with material nature, and we're conditioned by it. So even we become detached through knowledge, let some time pass, and there we are again, involved in matter, in our favorite way of being involved in matter, whatever you know, the garden variety is for each individual. Is it possible? Oh, Kapila Dev, is it possible to actually become free? And his answer immediately is yes, by the power of bhakti. And specifically, he says, bhakti has the power to dissolve false ego and the subtle body, material mind, material intelligence, dissolved. I'm mentioning it because that's this morning's verse too. He's saying it again, chapter 33. Nothing else has that power. No other process than bhakti has that power. So one can go up, but one will come back down. Just nature. And you can keep trying to go up and keep trying to go up. It's artificial. It's not our nature. As we were discussing briefly yesterday evening, we have our sorup. The soul has his nature. There's a conditioned nature. Swabhava. Brahma karma swabhavajam, kshatriya karma swabhavajam, vaishya karma swabhavajam, shudra karma swabhavajam. We have our swabhava. Swa means one's own, and bhava means, in this case, nature. Our inclination, our spirit, our attitude. And the attitude, the swabhava, is dictated, literally, dictated by material nature, the modes of material nature. We receive a body and we're dictated by the body that we receive. The body means not just the gross one, but the subtle one. We're captured by gross and subtle. Like Prabhupada exclaims in chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita, you get the body of a dog and you behave like a dog. You get the body of a king, you behave like a king. Etc. But that's not who we are. That's not our swabhava. That's not our, there is a spiritual swabhava or our spiritual swarup. And the liberated position, exactly on the topic of this morning, the liberated position, even within this body, is to function from, identify with, and act, you know, from the seat of consciousness of your spiritual identity. Starting with, you know, in very simple terms, I'm Krishna's eternal servant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu obviously taught the same thing. Kiva vipra, kiva nyaji, shudra kene noi. I'm not a learned person. He was a learned person. I'm not a sannyasi. He was a sannyasi. I'm not a shudra. He wasn't a shudra, but, you know, we're not these external things. We may act appropriate for our situation. A sannyasi should act like a sannyasi, grihastha should act like a grihastha, and so forth. We should act according to the nature that we've been endowed with. And that's not our identity. And one should be situated in their relationship with Krishna. That's the liberated position. And is it possible in this lifetime? Yes, it's not exaggeration. It's not wishful thinking. It's not hyperbole. It's meant, the whole message of the Bhagavatam, the whole message of this section of the Bhagavatam, is to come to that position. So, after hearing everything, the beginning of this concluding chapter of the whole section, Devahuti offers 8 prayers. So there's summary points. And in those summary points, she's glorifying the bhakti process. specifically a very famous verse, Swapacha. Even if one is, if by birth one is very disqualified, even born in a family of dog eaters, if one takes the chanting of the holy name, one becomes highly qualified to know the absolute truth, just like our discussion yesterday. And the converse is, even if one is born in a very elevated family and knows all of the practices and principles of Brahminical culture, if they haven't taken shelter of the personality of God, it's to no avail. From a transcendental perspective, from a mode of goodness perspective, it's good. From a transcendental perspective, it misses the target altogether. In simple language, it's, you know, the position of liberation, but not just the material kind, the negation kind. And so that's what this morning's verse is. But she's glorifying him. You're not my son. You're Lord Vishnu. You very kindly come as my son to allow me the opportunity to serve. But you're Lord Vishnu, and you're the object of meditation of all who are transcendentally situated. So she's glorifying, summarizing his position in the process of bhakti. So that ends with verse 8. So this morning we're going to be discussing verse 9 and 10. Maitreya is the speaker. So it starts Maitreya Uvacha. Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. It goes back to the beginning of Canto 3. Vidura is on pilgrimage. He sees many things, and he sees Uddhava. They have some wonderful exchange. Uddhava sends him to go see Maitreya, because Maitreya was present when Krishna spoke transcendental knowledge to Uddhava. Maitreya was there and he heard. So Maitreya is very capable. He's my senior by age and so forth. Go to Maitreya. So he goes to Maitreya. And he presents a number of questions to Maitreya, and Maitreya is responding. And this is part of it. The Maitreya says, after Devahuti's prayers, "Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila, satisfied by the words of his mother, towards whom he was very affectionate, replied with gravity." And short purport, since the Lord is all perfect, his exhibition of affection for his mother was also complete. After hearing the words of his mother, he, most respectfully, with due gravity and good manners, the personality of Godhead, but he's simultaneously the personality of Godhead and in a relationship, transcendental relationship of the son of Devahuti. He's honoring her parental affection, Vatsalya Rasa. So he's taking the position of her son and showing due respect and good manners and speaking very gravely, so forth. So it's seemingly worldly, but it's not worldly. It's transcendental. It's a transcendental exchange of love, simultaneously, again, with imparting knowledge. So the knowledge, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear mother, the path of self-realization which I have already instructed to you is very easy. You can execute this system without difficulty. And by following it, you shall very soon be liberated, even within your present body. So he's responding to her question in chapter 25. How can I, by the process I gave you, this is how you can become free from undue affinity for the temporary. And in this particular application, it's for family life, but affinity for the temporary. Being the enjoyer of that which isn't really enjoyable, nor is it ours. It's to be enjoyed by someone else. And we're thieves. A very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada. Devotional service is so perfect that simply by following the rules and regulations and executing them under the direction of the spiritual master, one is liberated, as it is said herein, from the clutches of Maya, even in this body. In other yogic processes, or in the empiric philosophical speculation, one is never certain whether or not he is at the perfectional stage. But in the discharge of devotional service, if one has unflinching faith in the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master and follows the rules and regulations, he is sure to be liberated, again, even within this present body. Then comes the scriptural reference. Srila Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, has also confirmed this. Iha yasya harir dasye. Regardless of where he is situated, anyone whose only aim is to serve the Supreme Lord under the direction of the spiritual master is called Jivan Mukta, or one who is liberated even within his material body. Sometimes doubts arise in the minds of neophytes about whether or not the spiritual master is liberated. And sometimes neophytes are doubtful about the bodily affairs of the spiritual master. The point of liberation, however, is not to see the bodily symptoms of the spiritual master. One has to see the spiritual symptoms of the spiritual master. Jivan Mukta means that even though one is in the material body, parentheses, there are still some material necessities since the body is material. Because one is fully situated in the service of the Lord, he should understand, he should be understood to be liberated. And then final paragraph. Liberation entails being situated in one's own position. Swarup. That is the definition of Srimad Bhagavatam. Muktir, swarupena vyavastati. The swarup, or actual identity of the living entity, is described by Lord Chaitanya. Jivera swarupaya Krishnara nityadas. The real identity of the living entity is that he is eternally a servitor of the Supreme Lord. If someone is 100% engaged in the service of the Lord, he is to be understood as liberated. One must understand whether or not he is liberated by his activities in devotional service, not by other symptoms. Is it really possible? Same as Devahuti's question. Is it really possible to become liberated, to go back to Godhead in this lifetime to come to that stage or standard? Is it really possible? Her doubt is, specifically, we've been looking in any direction, you see, material nature. And we've been implicated in material nature since time immemorial. Who can say how many lifetimes we're stuck? Aren't we? I mean, even if you can go up, you can go back down again. Isn't that our experience? You get some knowledge and you feel, or you get some nice something and you feel, wow. And wait a while. Is it really possible? Just like, you know, the hippie expression was stay high forever. Kapila Dev is saying it's easy. And it's not difficult. Same thing, just the other language. Easy, not difficult, particularly in comparison to other processes that are uncertain. The severity of austerities, of a tapasvi, and all the other processes. Very extreme. Very extreme. To the extreme that we couldn't even consider doing because it's so extreme. For example, I was visiting a temple that has a restaurant, Govinda's restaurant, connected to the temple over there on the side. And in the restaurant, they had a little reading room, something like what Prabhupada encouraged. So there's Prabhupada's books, but on the table, using language of Western culture, coffee table. So they had picture books that people could look through, and picture books. So one of the picture books, I looked at the picture book, and there were pictures of yogis. There was a yogi who was lying down on a cactus, a big one with big stickers. He was lying there, and, you know, little basket, people could give some money so he could maintain himself. And then another picture was a yogi in the heat of the summer, because, you know, here it's not hot like it is in parts of India. It's really hot. And, you know, two rings of fire surrounding, you know, sitting in the midst of the heat of the summer, put two rings of fire. Then the next picture was a yogi with a big beard in Gangotri, and all around is ice, and his beard is floating on the water, and all you can see is, you know, his head tilted back, and, you know, ice water. So cold in the winter and heat in the summer, and, you know, just tolerating pain and the inconvenience of the senses. Why? Well, the understanding is it's sense gratification that draws us into further and deeper into material existence. So, deny the senses. According to the language of Bhagavad Gita, parching the senses in those kinds of severe austerities, it's the mode of ignorance. And it doesn't bring one to transcendence. Or, as Prabhupada is putting it a little softer, there's no certainty. And there, you can't even know for sure, have you reached there? Because tendency is very strong. Residual tendency is very strong. And there's only one way to eliminate that. That's bhakti, which bhakti means Krishna does it. Krishna removes. exactly what Devahuti says, chapter 25. It's your Maya. I know it's Maya, but it's your Maya. You put it there so you can remove it. Please remove it. So he can just like say, okay, it's gone. He's giving a process because there's the condition of heart that we have to submit ourselves to. And then the eligibility is there. Because Krishna can just give himself, and we won't know what to do with Krishna giving himself. Krishna is giving himself to us in the form of the holy name. We don't know, you know, we're distracted. So there has to be two-way. It's something from our side, as well as something from Krishna's side. No, it's for you. You keep coughing. You keep coughing or choking or something, and, you know, it'll be nice if you don't have to do that. Control of the senses becomes possible if you control the mind. Conversely, don't control the mind, you can't control your senses. And how can you control the mind? You have to have strong intelligence. And where do you get the correct strong intelligence is intelligence that comes from Krishna, that Krishna reserves for those who are his devotees. And that intelligence, buddhi, guides bhakti, the activities of devotional service. So it's to be followed. It's implicit in the way that Prabhupada is. It's in the verse. It's twice stated in the purport. And it's not the mechanical following of regulations. It's the following of regulations in a devotional mood. Like cleaning the pots to make your heart clean, or cleaning the floor because it's pleasing to. It's Krishna's place. It belongs to Krishna. And making Krishna's place clean for Krishna. It's pleasing to Krishna. It's said that when Krishna was living in Dwarka, although his queens, all 16,108 of them, had so many maidservants, they weren't the enjoyers of the service of their maidservants. They would cleanse the palace with their own hand as if they were a maidservant. But it didn't have any dust. But they cleansed anyway because for Krishna. They weren't stuck in their, oh, I'm a queen. I don't clean because I'm a queen. I have people to clean. It's the position of expressing one's love through the medium of service. And that's how transcendence is to be reached. The Sanskrit of text 10 is param kashtam. Param is supreme or transcendental. Kashtam, goal. So Prabhupada has put in the translation, liberation. But we should understand, this liberation isn't the merging kind of liberation, it's the other four kinds, according to Vaishnav teachings. Just like Sarva Bhuma Bhattacharya in his discussion with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described, when people hear mukti, commonly, and it's true, commonly people think of Sayuja Mukti, merging with the Supreme. Although there's four other kinds. Vaishnav liberations. Sarupya, Salokya, Samipya, Sharsti. Four other kinds. You reside on the planet of the Lord. You have opulences like the Lord. You have a form like the Lord. It's in Vaikuntha, not in the Brahmajyoti. It's a Vaishnav liberation. But people commonly think of the merging kind, become one with the Supreme. That's because that's what people want. become God. So here, the word liberation is used, but because of the context, it's an appropriate term. And there's there's three references that elaborate. In the second paragraph, Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasagira nikilapyapti bastasu jivan mukta sa uchate. It is said that the stage of jivan mukta is where karmana manasa gira. So that's the whole package. The body, manasa, the mind, your words. They're even within this material body, if one engages them exclusively in Krishna service,
Harir
Dasye Iha Yasya Harir. Yasya is the person, that person who Harir Dasye engages in the service of Hari, the personality of Godhead. This is a verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami is giving this teaching that same as Kapila, it's Kapila's teaching, and he says presenting it in his language, even in the same body, using the body, using the mind, subtle body, using the power of speech in Harir Dasye. We know what Dasa means, it's servant. Jiva Goswami makes a comment. He wrote a commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And his commentary says this word dasye, very simple. It means the inclination to be in service of Krishna. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is a Parameshri was asking yesterday, is if Gayatri is the mother of the Vedas and the mother of all mantras that are Vedic, what's the Hare Krishna mantra? What's the relation? Well, she's the mother and Krishna's the father. He's the source of everything. He's the source of everything. He's the source of the mother. He's the source of everything. He's the source of everything. And this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is not a restricted to Brahmanas kind of mantra. It's not a Vedic, in the classical sense of mantra. It's a Panchatrika mantra, in one sense, meaning. Vedic mantras are to be chanted only by Brahmanas. The effectiveness is to receive them from a qualified Brahmana. First qualify oneself, receive the mantra from a qualified Brahmana, and then you can chant the mantra, and then there'll be some effectiveness. And the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra doesn't have that restriction. Anybody can chant. It's a different kind of mantra. And it's Krishna. The mantra is Krishna, who is the source of the Vedas. And Gayatri is the mother of the Vedas. But the Maha Mantra is everybody, anybody. And what is the primary force of that mantra? It awakens our constitutional position, being the servant of Krishna. It's there, dormant. Instead of it being active, this service to Krishna spirit, we're in the service of Maya, the service of the body and the mind and the eye and mind. Just think about it for a moment. We're at the center. It's all about me, my happiness and what I'm feeling and I like and I don't like and me. We're at the center. Well, what's it like if we're not at the center? Well, if you're an impersonalist, it's nothing's at the center. But if you're a devotee, it's Krishna's at the center. What's that like? Krishna's at the center. I'm in the picture, but everyone else is also in the picture, and Krishna's at the center. It's a whole other picture. How do you get there? Mahamantra. That spirit of the access into that spiritual paradigm is the mood of service. Hare or Dasye. Better chant your japa attentively, because that'll take you out of I'm at the center consciousness and Krishna's at the center consciousness, and the medium is dasya, or the vocative is dasye. Hari dasya or Hari dasye. There's a purport that I very much like in the sixth canto, chapter 1, Bhagavatam. It's another kind of very broad series of verses that sets the stage for the whole canto. At the beginning of the sixth canto, there's a question by Maharaj Parikshit. So sixth canto, it's, you know, close to halfway through the Bhagavatam. So if he was going to die in 7 days, then it's like, you know, 3.5 days. The clock is ticking. He's kaput shortly. He hears from the fifth canto of the hellish planets, and his thoughts go to people that are going to have to go to those hellish planets, and not about, hey, I'm going to die. Me. He's a king, so he's thinking of the welfare of the citizens of his kingdom. That's what good kings do. It's what good protectors of others do. They think of the welfare of those who they're to protect. So his question is, what's to prevent people who have sinned from having to experience hell? And that it's too terrible. What can be done? What's the counteracting agent to sin? It's a classic question that any religion has its answer. And according to what the answer is, that's what the religion is. So he gives, keeping it really simple, Shukadeva Goswami gives Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, and finally ends with Bhakti. Bhakti is the means to relieve one from the reactions, not only the reactions of sin, but even the tendency to do it again. You know, this go back to the affinity for matter. Same subject matter. How do you get rid of the affinity for being involved in an enjoying mood with matter? Because you do that, you're guaranteed you're going to make some mistakes. Even you're good. You're going to make some mistakes. So one of the first answer he gave is, well, you do atonement. You atone for your sins, you made some mistakes, and you get relieved of the reaction. Maharaj Parikshit says, yeah, but the tendency's still there. Oh, right, so you have to do knowledge. And then it'll check the tendency. Well, even you have knowledge, it doesn't necessarily check tendency. Bhakti. And in the purport, one beautiful purport, Jiva Goswami comments, there are stages of bhakti. And even at the preliminary stage, same message as here, the preliminary stage is just having a desire to be in service to Krishna. Similar to chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. If you can't follow the regulations of bhakti, then try to work for Krishna. That's karma yoga. Try to work for Krishna. I like working for Krishna. I like to go do something for Krishna. Go to the temple and mow the lawn, or go on Harinam and chant and give out invitations to the temple, or give out books, or I like to do some service. And you, there's a happiness in that service. I like that. When's the next time we're going to go on Harinam or book distribution or give out prasadam? I mean, anybody that's, for example, anyone that's served prasadam at Rath Yatra, it's so fun. There's a happiness just distributing prasadam. It's just a simple thing. You get the idea. It's the happiness derived from the mood of service is so special. It's not just the happiness. The happiness lifts one above the other kind of happiness. Pram drishtva nivartate. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinam rasavarjam rasopyasya pram drishtva nivartate. How do you get rid of those lower tendencies? It's not just by saying no to the lower tendency. It's by experiencing a higher taste. Because you say no, you'll find yourself doing it anyways. It's artificial. How do you get beyond the artificial? You know, the yogi that's lying on a cactus or water up to here in the Gangotri in the middle of the winter. Restraining the senses in some artificial manner, or restraining the mind in some artificial manner. How do you go beyond the artificial? Bhakti will carry you beyond permanently. And so that's the liberation that's being spoken of. Iha yasya. Yasya is, so I'm going to go through the word for word. Yasya is the bhakta, or the practicing bhakta, the sadhaka, all of us. Iha refers to our activity. Iha yasya harer bhaktir. Karmana manasa gira. So if you dedicate all those things exclusively to Hari, to the service dasye. Isn't that, again, this emphasis of I want to be in service. Nikilasu is all, and then it's all comes again. Nikilasu api avastasu, in all conditions of material existence. So, squeaky clean. No, so much for Krishna, so much for me. It's so much for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Offered all to Krishna. They had a bumper sticker. Offered all to Krishna. Offered all to Krishna. What about something over here? Offered all to Krishna. And one who has that offered all to Krishna, jivan mukta. Sa uchate. There's a yoga studio, yoga center in New York. And it's called, the name of the group is Jivan Mukta Yoga, or Jivan Mukti Yoga. Yogeshwar used to go there and teach Bhagavad Gita. It's not a Vaishnava place. It's a yoga place, but you know, behind the yoga is impersonalism. And he was giving bhakti. Because that's really jivan mukta sa uchate. Even in the, so the verse of Rupa Goswami is, even in this body, all activity, in all circumstances, is for Hari. Then, one can be liberated in this lifetime. And the second reference from the purport is another definition of mukti. And this definition of mukti, muktir hitvanyatarupam svarupena vyavastati. You've heard that before? Some of you have heard that before? It's it comes from Canto 2, Chapter 10, It's a section that's verses 1 and 2 of Canto 2, Chapter 10, is describing the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. And one of them is liberation. One of the basic topics of the Bhagavatam. And that verse is defining, or Shukadeva Goswami is explaining, what does the Bhagavatam say about that topic? In its short phrase, simple little sutra, Muktir Hitvanyata Rupam Sarupena Vyavastiti. Word for word. Hitva means giving up, you know, renunciation, detachment. Hitva Anyata Anyata means otherwise, rupam. Hitvanyata rupam Swarupena Swarupa. Same as we heard last night, if you recall. The topics before 434 Bhagavad Gita are describing the Atma, the Swarup of the Atma, the actual form of the living entity in its not conditioned state. We're conditioned, and the conditioning is visible. We have bodies and we have minds and material intelligence and false ego. You can't see those last three, but you can see the influence of those last three. And that's not who we are. So there's who we are. That's the sarup of the Atma, the real identity of the self. So the real identity here, sarupena vyavastati. Vyavastati means permanent, stiti, vyavastati, that permanent situation. The topic of liberation is explaining what's our permanent, not that, you know, the ever-changing one. Even in the midst of message that we're hearing from Kapila Devas, even in the midst of the ever-changing, there's the position of liberation if one follows the process that he gave, the bhakti process. You can be liberated even in this body. You don't have to wait until, you know, cross your fingers and hope that you go to a good place after this life. You can be liberated in this lifetime. That can be. That's what the Bhagavatam wants to give us. It's what Kapila Dev wants to give us. It's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to give us. It's what Prabhupada wanted to give the world. At least here's the opportunities. Please say yes. Liberation, the permanent situation of the soul, even within the body. Here's the translation from Bhagavatam. Liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the living entity after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. But you can be liberated even before you give up. It's give up the identification with. And you can be liberated even in this lifetime. Now, again, Devahuti, chapter 27, I think it is, says, I get the philosophy. I'm not this body. I got it. But, you know, who lives their life that way? And can we really live our life that way? Is it really possible? By bhakti, it's really possible. Please appreciate, you know, the gift that's being given and the way that the gift is being given. So simple. Exactly what he says, Kapila Dev says. Text 10.